Good afternoon, Muskegon. Hi, this is Torn in Two. I'm your host, Gregory T. Roberts, for this December 16th, 2022. First of all, I'll let you know it is a snow advisory outside, 32 degrees. Let's get right into this thing. My co-host every week is Pastor Melvin C. Burns II. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Brother Roberts. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I am doing well. We have a guest here today, and we want to get him right on. And it's really important. I want, first of all, the people that are listening, if you don't get a chance to see the show, if you're listening by radio on WVS 103.7 The Beat or M106, you can go back to our Facebook site of the Emoji app, and you can watch this show. And this show is important. Some of us who have done our blood check and history and stuff like that, I found out like I'm like 46% Nigerian. Okay. But here's the thing. What do I know about it? What do you know about it, Pastor Burns? Anything?
Bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces, and you're further off than I am. Today's guest, and I need you, everybody that are listening, or if you have questions, go to our Facebook sites on 103.7 The Beat, WVS, of course, and M106 to put your questions down for our guests. Without any hesitation, let's get out. Put your hands together for our guest today, Mr. Mosley. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I did not want to slaughter that name, so give everybody your full name.
You did it good the first time, after we talked about it. My name is Chinua Mosley, and I'm happy to be here today.
Now, Chinua, you're a father of two?
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right. I was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. My mom was an interior designer, and then she moved into just the design field in general. And my father owned a couple of different businesses as an entrepreneur. Before he passed, he was running a tea business online. Mm-hmm. For myself, I have a younger brother, also living in Georgia. But as for me, I am an educator by profession. I've been in education for about 18 years at this point. Right now I'm teaching, or I'm working as an educator in the United Arab Emirates. I worked in the U.S. in Georgia for about 9 years. And so I have about 9 years here as well.
Okay. Before we go deeper, what college did you graduate from?
Clark Atlanta University.
Okay.
And I got a degree in early childhood education from there.
And the second thing I want people to know, tell people where you are right now.
I'm in the United Arab Emirates, in the city of Abu Dhabi.
So we're international. I just want people to know that we're international.
Yeah,
okay, Pastor Burns.
What time is it there, just for our listeners to know?
It is 11:04 p.m.
Okay, so we caught you a little before bedtime, huh?
Yes. Yes, I'll sleep after this one.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it. Okay.
Oh, no problem.
I had a chance to read a little bit about your background. You've been on a little journey, it seems. Why don't you tell us how this all got started, about you writing the book? What started the seed of you wanting to do something like this? Not just writing the book, I should say, but discovering this writing style in addition.
Art is a passion for me. Okay. Design is a passion for me. Both of my parents, they're both paths, but they were both talented artists. Mm-hmm. And I grew up around design pretty much my entire life. Mm-hmm. So I have a fondness for it and an affinity towards it. Mm-hmm. I never really thought that I was going to do anything necessarily with it. It's always just kind of been a hobby. But with my youngest, I was looking for, you know, books for him, as we do as parents. Sure. I was in the bookstore, and I wanted him to have some nonfiction books because science is what I taught in the U.S. I was a science teacher for most of my time. So I have a gravitation towards, you know, nonfiction as well as the fiction books as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little harder, but it's not too difficult to find fiction books that have us in it. But when you're talking about trying to find a kid's book that's nonfiction that has us in it, it is, they are very few and far between.
Right.
And so for me, you know, I wanted him to see himself in the media that he was being introduced to. And I wasn't happy with what I saw in the stores and what I saw online. And rather than, you know, complaining about it, I figured I'd do something. And so
nice.
I made my own. In terms of the writing system that's there, there is a gentleman in Nigeria. I don't want to butcher his name. But in Nigeria, there is an ideographic writing system. And so what that means is that each individual symbol stands for a full term or a full idea. Mm-hmm. It's similar to how people see like Chinese, Mandarin, Cantonese symbols, but we have it in Africa as well.
Okay.
So there's a gentleman that's out there right now, and he redesigned them to fit the structure of a font so that it can be, you know, because it's kind of dying out right now. So he wanted it to be brought back and used on a regular basis. So you make it practical, make it into a font, and then people can just, you know, load up the font like you would any other character system, and then just type it out or whatever. And the symbols are open source. So I've been following him on that for a minute, and then I decided to write a book for my son. And I was like, you know what, I might as well match these two ideas together. The symbols are already created for me, so all I have to do is, you know, do some illustrations and kind of set it up or whatever. And, you know, the rest is history.
How old is the original language that we're talking about?
It is several centuries old, definitely over 1,000 years.
Wow. Wow. Talk to people about why it's important that we know about the very thing that you're talking about, this language, especially for people like my people coming from Nigeria and stuff like that. And I don't know a lot about Nigeria. So talk a little bit about the importance of knowing the history.
All right. So, you know, given the history of Africa just in general, and the history of colonization in general, you know, a lot of the cultural elements are lost because the culture, elements of the culture that were used, you know, like communication and so forth, they often get thrown away so that you can do some of the cohabitating with your colonizer, right? So language is lost, writing systems are lost because you can't do both in some situations, or the person that's coming in wants you to conform to the way that they do things. So this particular language, this particular writing style actually has existed for over 1,000 years. Given the influx of English and Roman style characters, it's starting to die out. Connecting with these languages and writing styles helps to preserve it. you know? And then, you know, there's a sense of pride. You know, people, like, when people see the book or people see the language for the first time, one of the main primary reactions that I receive, I never knew that Africa had a language like this. I didn't know that this existed, you know? And the only reason why we don't know is because someone didn't tell us or we didn't do that research for ourselves. So it's important to put these types of things out there so that people can be informed.
Okay. Master Burns.
Because this is a different type of writing than, you know, the traditional English, did you find it better or more difficult, less difficult to work with in terms of telling a story?
Well, I found it, this is, for the type of book that it is, it works perfectly. Okay. I don't know about doing like a storybook per se, but the way that the book is set up, it's the book is called In Sibiri Anatomy. It's available on Amazon. The book, it talks about different parts of human anatomy. It gives some interesting facts about it. And then it shows the symbol, gives the Igbo, which is a Nigerian dialect, pronunciation for the word. And then, it's written out so that you can see it. So in terms of what I see, the type of book that it is perfect because the symbols are beautiful. They help to, convey, the idea that, you know, I'm trying to convey here, you know, there's beauty in where we came from and our culture.
Yes.
And we just have to share it with each other.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the board. Hey, sis, how you doing? All the way from Ohio. Is the language similar to hieroglyphics used by ancient Egyptians?
It is the same idea in terms of having, you know, symbols instead of, you know, these little, like, kind of like line characters or whatever to stand for terms. But as far as I am familiar with, the hieroglyphics use multiple pictures to stand for different words or whatever. So this one is more like one individual symbol that stands for an entire word. So it's a similar kind of idea, but there are some differences there.
Pastor Burns.
Okay. So not only do we have this interest of you discovering this language and learning it, but you also have the entrepreneurial side of writing the book, publishing the book. Why don't you tell us about that journey a little bit?
Well, that journey is still in progress. let's see. It took me probably about a year to do all of the illustrations. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of the publishing, I went through Amazon KDP. Okay. Which is a self-publishing through Amazon, but as an educator by profession, I did quite a bit of research before I settled on how I was going to do it. So it probably took me about a year to figure out exactly how I wanted to publish and to get the layouts and everything the way that I wanted them to be. And so right now, it's a marketing battle, you know, just trying to get the good word out there. So I'm very appreciative of you all and platforms like this to share and hopefully inspire and encourage others.
Now, how important, I know how important it is for our households to explain and have this stuff around, books around for our kids to see. But how important is it for educators to have books like this as well?
It is just as important, right? We want our kids to see themselves in the media that they consume. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially for our school age kids and the ones that are in preschool, you know, they're in those places for most of the day. And so for educators, especially educators of color with children of color, it is just as important to have these images in the classroom and the school libraries up on the walls in the schools, just as important as it is for us as parents to have them in our own houses, because these kids are internalizing everything. They don't stop internalizing what they see. So, you know, they should be, you know, encompassed in it as much as possible.
Nice. Pastor Burns.
So I'm curious about this you said what led you to write this, take on this journey was looking for books for your own son. Did you go through drafts with him? Would you just see the final product? What was his response?
Well, when I started this, he was like 3, I think. Okay. So he didn't have too much to say about it.
You get ready for him.
Yeah, he was primed. But there's an illustration of him in the book as well. Okay. So, you know, he's a little bit older now. Like I said, it took me about 2 years to get everything kind of set up or whatever. So right now, he's into it and he's engaged. And so I appreciate the feedback that I've gotten from other educators on, you know, making sure that the message that I was trying to convey was conveyed in the correct manner. So
What age group is this book targeted toward?
It's for pre-literate to probably around 7 or 8. Okay. So, you know, there are lots of images of the body parts for a child that can't necessarily read yet, you know, in the early like 2s and 3s, you can just kind of use it as an instructional piece in terms of pointing to body parts and connecting it to themselves and, you know, seeing those types of things. But the elements of the Igbo translation and the different elements of the explanations of what the body parts do and interesting facts about it, those kind of hit more towards a 7-year-old, 8-year-old version. The intent was to kind of make a book that would grow with the kids' capability so that, you know, it could be used for multiple years.
Okay. Let's go back to the state of Ohio, Naftira. It's also important to learn different languages also. How important is it? If you look at other countries, and you're being in a different country right now, where they automatically learn several different languages, where
that's true.
In this country, it's like you better learn English.
Yes,
and
yes.
You don't. Then we don't care about the world system of learning other languages.
That's true. Like I said, I've been here for about 9 years. Mm-hmm. I've taught students from every continent and many, many different countries around the world. I would say pretty much everyone outside of my British and American students can speak at least 2 languages, at least 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you say that aloud, a little louder, because I don't think people heard it.
I was saying that, you know, with the students that I've had from many, many different countries, I would say I've taught students from over 50 different countries in my time as an international educator, and all of the students, 100% that are not American or British can speak multiple languages.
So we come into an international market only speaking 1 language. Thinking that it is just the queen or the king's language or whatever, and thinking that we're good and can't speak to other people.
Yeah. Basically. That's true.
Pastor Burns.
Let me broaden the discussion a little bit. You know, having, you know, taught in the U.S. and then over in the UAE, do you have any critique of the American learning system in general that you want to share with us today?
Actually, to probably contrary to how people believe, the American learning system is actually superior to a lot of other learning systems out there. Mm-hmm. The way that we allow our students to, or we teach students to think for themselves, a lot of educational systems that are not Western do not teach their kids to think for themselves. And so they come out of the system and they're still extremely reliant on other people because they have a hard time making their own decisions, and their educational systems actually teach them to pretty much kind of follow what other people are telling them to do. So I actually have grown a greater appreciation of my personal educational journey. And my oldest son, I didn't allow him to graduate from here because he was here with me. I sent him back home to finish school.
Interesting. Okay. Mm. That's interesting.
Got to go back to the board. Back to Ohio, Nefertiti. My sister Vicky says my sorority is having a book drive for kids. So I ordered this book and will read it myself. Thank you, sister.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sister. I really appreciate that. I appreciate getting the word out. My book isn't the only one that is about this African language. So, you know, if you're interested and you like it, just if you put in Sabiri Books into Amazon, you can find at least one more.
Well, let me put my foot in some mess here. Talk to the people that are not our skin color and let them know, instead of trying to whitewash history, why is it important to know the history from Africa and things from Africa? Because some people don't know a lot of things involved from Africa. Hello.
Well, first thing is self-knowledge. For us, and coming from systems that, you know, pretty much teach about European history and the European way of doing things, it is definitely important for children and young adults to, and even, I mean, older adults, to understand where we came from, to understand, you know, that the accomplishments that our ancestors made are valuable, that they, you know, had advanced technology before other people came and, you know, invaded their space, that they were doing calculations and building things and had wealth in societies. All of these things, without other people coming in to invade our space or impose any ideas onto us. And so I think that it's important for us to know our history, number one, to have a sense of self-pride. And then number two, to understand, you know, the legacy of our ancestors.
Going back to Ohio. Yes.
You said it like she said it.
Yeah. Yes. That's a bird.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I think you indicated this was like a ancient language in southern Nigeria. I read that. What's been the response to people in Nigeria? Have you gotten feedback from Nigerians about your book?
A little bit here and there. There's kind of a push to bring this particular writing style back. Okay. And so a book was, you know, there are Facebook groups out there. Obviously, this is being projected onto a Facebook Live. But so there are groups out there that are helping in the spreading of the word. And they've reposted my book a couple times. And, you know, all the feedback that I've received has been positive, so I'm very blessed to have a positive reaction thus far.
Right.
Now, without telling us the, you know, busting the story, tell us a little bit about the book itself.
All right, so the book is the first in a line of books that I have in the works. It is an anatomy book, so it talks about human anatomy, arms, legs, eyes, that type of thing. It goes into these body parts into some detail, and then it also speaks towards interesting facts that you may or may not have known about them. The book has the symbols in Sibiri symbols in there. And then it also has the Igbo language for the words as well. So you get the English word, you get the symbol in Igbo, you get in Igbo in Sibiri, and you get the word written in Roman characters in Sibiri so that you can pronounce it yourself. You have some beautiful illustrations in there of, you know, all kind of melanated people. And then you have the text that gives the information. So it's made, you know, it's in the nonfiction format, and it has bright colors and everything. So hopefully it will draw, you know, your children in. And be an interesting piece that they'll keep for years to come.
Pastor Burns.
Say the name of the book again for people who are listening.
In Sibiri Anatomy.
In Sibiri Anatomy.
Yes.
And is available on Amazon.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Pastor Burns.
Okay. So I know I have a few friends that have written books. Do you check periodically to see how the sales are doing, or you get that information from a Amazon, and what things are you doing to kind of market your book?
Well, I've done press releases, which one of them has brought me here. I have, there's a website called Fiverr, where you can get some freelance work done. So, I've had an individual do some, kind of PR pieces for me or whatever. And so my next step is to do some direct marketing using Facebook ads and Instagram ads. I haven't really gotten into that thus far, but those are the next moves that are in the works.
Okay. Going back to Ohio, Sister Vicky said, I ordered a book for Baby Rain also. We must spread the word about his work. Thank you. Because I was going to do the same thing, but thank you, Auntie. All right. Going back to you, Pastor Burns.
Okay. Tell us, you said you have, without, you know, again, giving too much away, you say you have some other projects that you're in the works or you're formulating. What do you see in the future?
So this one is about anatomy, like appendages and so forth. So along the same lines for this particular brand of books, I'll be doing books about, you know, people in the community, books about, you know, the organ systems on the inside of your body, animals, things that are around the house, those types of things. Kind of similar to the things that are currently on the market. Right now, actually, one of the inspirations for making this book was that I was in a bookstore and I saw a book for Japanese characters, and it was about things that were inside the house or whatever. And I thought, okay, that might be a good idea for, you know, using the African language, because there really aren't books like that on the market. I would say there's my book, and there's only one other that I'm aware of that actually has like a baby book with African symbols and language inside of it. So, yeah.
What do you recommend for parents, grandparents who are raising kids and grandkids by you being an international teacher? Of what way should we go in training and educating our kids? Because a lot of people in this country are trying to whitewash education.
Well, definitely the first educator is always the parent. You know, if we even think about religious upbringing, all right, without even choosing a religion. Right. If you have a religious background, you don't send your kids to a public school and expect the public school to teach your kids the foundations of your background and your belief system and those cultures and things like that. It is the job of the community. It's the job of the parent. It's the job of the grandparents to instill those values, those stories, those elements of culture into the kids. And if they get it also outside of the house, then that's great. That's icing on the cake. But in the end, we can't take away the responsibility of the parent as a primary educator of their children.
Did you hear that, Muskegon? Or worldwide? Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. It's your responsibility. So many times I hear a lot of people going, it's the responsibility of the teacher. What's that? What your thoughts on that?
It is the responsibility of the teacher to a degree. The teachers should definitely not ignore the cultural background of the children that they're working with, and they should try to incorporate it as much as possible. That's just good teacher practice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always say that education is like a stool, and there are three legs on that stool. If you take one of those legs off, the stool's not going to stand up. One is the students. The other one is the educational institution. So that includes the teachers, the principals, all those people. And then the third one is the parents. We have to have all three. What we do, it doesn't work without one. We have to have all of them. It's non-negotiable.
This man teaches so good. He preaches so good. We might have to run this show right, run it back next week. Pastor Burns.
Yeah. Two things. What kind of pushback have you had to deal with with getting your book out there, even when you started maybe presenting the idea? What kind of, and you sound like a kind of guy, don't let people's negativity stop you. But what kind of pushback did you get from folks?
I actually haven't had any pushback. I'm blessed to have family and friends that support me. You know, I'm in a space in my career where, you know, my colleagues, you respect what I do. You know, you always have to make sure that you're good at what it is that you're doing, especially for us. We make sure that we're good at what it is that we're doing. So, you know, nobody can come back and say that it was messed up because of me. No, if it was done by me, then it was done to the best of its ability. Sure. So I've had
Mr. Mosley, stop. You just, you throw so much language. You're like Steve Nash here. Yeah. Please say that again, what you just said.
I said, you know, especially for us, when we're working in a whatever field that it is, I know for myself, I was taught this by my parents. You make sure that you're doing whatever it is that you are doing to the best of your ability. You must be working at a level of excellence. And so if anything occurs and there is a problem, then when they look to me, they know it wasn't me, because what I did, it was at the top of its game, you know. And I'm going to make sure that when I produce something that is at the top of its game, it's not at the top of its game, then it's not worth production.
Pastor Burns.
You got to own that final product when it's done. That's
exactly. Exactly. That's you. That's your legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
No, go ahead. I'm shaking my head over here.
We get entrepreneurs come on from time to time, you know, and there's some lessons that are thread throughout this idea of, you know, if it's yours, your name's on it, you can't point the finger at anybody else and say, hey, it was bad, but blame the guy over there. So, again, I'm impressed by the book, but also just the idea of our people being entrepreneurs, and you saying, what I was looking for wasn't out there. And even that, you know, you didn't blame somebody else. You said, I'm going to create it myself. And that's a lesson for our listeners and all those people that want to be entrepreneurs, you know, to get out there and get it themselves.
And that's the way to go, you know, for everybody that's listening. You know, we live in an amazing time. You can get your full education off of YouTube if that's what you wanted to do. There is another radio host that used to say the gatekeepers are gone. All right. When it comes to getting into what it is that you want to do, you might have issues when it comes to maybe financially or whatever, but there's always, right now, you know, you got a cell phone, you got internet, you have enough space to where you can start doing whatever it is that you want to do. Start at the smallest piece of the idea of what it is that you want and then build it for there. There are really no excuses.
Question from Grand Rapids, Michigan, I believe you're in, Doug. Doug D. Sims, just joining. He said, what's the book called?
The book is called In Sabiri Anatomy, and it is available on Amazon. So check it there. You won't be able to find it anywhere else.
Spell that In Sabiri for us.
N-S-I-B-I-R-I.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, just a second. I'm just looking at that. So, okay, all right. I'm looking at, but your story, the story about you and you being a father of two and all that kind of stuff, you've had articles written on other magazines. Talk about that as well. I'm looking at some of your other articles that people wrote about you.
So that was, like I said, I had a press release done on Fiverr. So I had an individual that I work with, you know, kind of craft a press release for me with the key points and information that I wanted. And then from there, after crafting the press release, you know, they sent it out to multiple different media agencies or whatever. So I did do a general one, which was through Fiverr. And then there's another website called blackpr.com. And so they have an actual focus for black media outlets, whether it be through, you know, digital or newspaper or radio, like we have here. So I went both of those particular routes for this.
If you want the spelling of the book, thank you, sister. That's the book title and the name and the spelling right there on the screen so you can see it and get the book on Amazon. It's not too late. I'm just amazed. I'm just thinking about this has got to be ran again. We definitely got to talk to you again. I want to go back. I want to go back and talk a little bit. Get away from the book for a second. But I want to talk about the ownership of how you talked about the ownership of us as parents being leaders in teaching and what we should expect teaching our own children first.
All right. As everyone knows it, we don't talk about it so much explicitly, but, you know, the children learn from what they see. They learn from their experiences over everything else. We can, you know, talk and show them books and have them watch TV as much as we want, but the primary way that a child is going to learn is through their experiences and seeing what's going on around them. So as parents, the first thing that we are is an educator to the child, because that child, even before that child is able to talk, is watching every single action that we have and emulating that in their own personal style, right? Mm. And as they get older and they start to understand a little bit more, you know, they'll take the things that they've learned just through watching their parents and then start integrating that with the other things like media and so forth. But in the end, that parent interaction, the parent actions, those are the roots. Those are the foundation for the learning, any learning that a child is going to receive. And that child is going to compare what they've been learning from their parents with everything else. And that's where those questions, you know, when kids start asking those whole bunch of questions, those questions start arising, especially when they start seeing discrepancies, you know, kids start to make those connections and they start asking, you know. So as a parent, number one, you need to make sure that the actions that you want your child to exhibit are the actions that you're exhibiting yourself.
Yes.
it's okay if you're not 100% there, but the movement towards doing what you're supposed to do, even that the process in the change is still an excellent lesson for the child to see those changes in those parents, in their parents over time, and to become wherever it is that they want to go to.
Wow. What about getting away from technology and picking up a book to read?
All right. So I am a technology integration specialist at this time. So my job right now is to encourage people to use more technology. Technology is not inherently bad. An issue that we have, and especially with today, is that in the past, it was much easier to censor the content that came to our children because either one, it came to a TV that had what, like 12 channels on it, mm-hmm. or pick up a book that you had to get from the library. Like that, the funnel of information was quite narrow. So it was very easy to determine what your child was consuming and to make cutoffs very mm-hmm. easily. But now with the internet and with children having a, you know, cellular devices or even, you know, tablets or iPads, that funnel is there's no end to it, right? And mm-hmm. so parents have to put it back on the parent. The parent has to own up to the availability of that content, mm-hmm. and the parent needs to close that funnel. And I'm saying needs, but you know, if you're not feeling that, you can say strongly suggest that that funnel is can be controlled by the parent, and there are multiple tools to do that. And so I do believe that children should be reading, but I'm okay if the kids read on a Kindle instead of a paper book. Mm-hmm. The quest for knowledge should never stop. The kids should not see it stopping the parents, and the kids should not be should continuously be encouraged. I recall, like for my dad, just a story of myself growing up. My brother and I would be in the library every weekend because my dad would go to the library every weekend. And he didn't go to the library for us. He went to the library for him because he wanted to get a book about, you know, gardening, or he wanted to get a book about, he wanted to get a cookbook, or he wanted to get something. My dad was always trying to learn something, and he brought us with him. So me and my brother sitting there in the library, there's nothing. We didn't have any toys or anything with us. What are we going to do? We're going to go and we're going to read books too.
Right.
You know? And so that type of exposure and being put in those places where we can get the type of content that is, you know, nutritious for our brains, you know what I'm saying? That mm-hmm. is, it's a necessary thing for parents to do.
Let's go back to Ohio. Will your book be available on audio?
For this particular book, I don't plan on putting it in audio. The symbols are a very important aspect of the way that the book is set up. So for me, it is important to put the book in a print format so that it can be seen. Now, I am thinking about doing a Kindle release, and possibly a ways away in the future, maybe doing like some videos or something like that. But I don't know. I have to get a greater idea of how I feel about the subject.
We'll talk to the owner of the radio station. Maybe we can get a Miami release party going and take care of Pastor Burns.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brother Moses, for old guys like Greg and I, when we say read, we think of books. You know, you point out, you know, again, more and more, you know, I look at my daughter, are you reading? Yeah, but it's on her phone. So we have to learn to adjust to a younger generation actually mm-hmm. reads on Kindles and reads on their yep. phone. And you know, we can barely, we don't have a bifocal big enough for that yet.
That's why my print is set at 52 over here.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
But that's a big adjustment for us. You know, watching, you know, kids, you know, first, second grade reading on tablets as opposed to paper and having in their hand. I assume in reality, in their world, it doesn't really make a difference. For us, it seems like it does, but I imagine it really doesn't.
I would say, especially for the for younger children, it is important to have, you know, physical print books. You know, mm-hmm. we're talking about like pre-reading and in the early ages, you know, up through maybe like 8 to 10. It is important to have those actual physical books down for them. Okay. Because once you connect it to a device, then there are so many distractions. The kid needs a level of self-control before mm-hmm. they can, you know, monitor their own actions with a device. So before we get to that, I'm definitely a proponent for having physical books for the little ones.
Okay. Wow. Now I might start this going back to Ohio. Sis says, how will others know is that Igbo?
Igbo
pronunciation.
All right. So within the book, actually within the first two pages of the book, I give a very detailed explanation of how the words inside of the book are supposed to be pronounced. There is a key with symbols that gives you an understanding of how to pronounce the words that are in the book.
Do you have the book by you? I mean, can you give us a little example of the book?
Give me 2 seconds. I'm going to see if I have a copy. Otherwise, I'm not sure if there's a way for me to.
That's all right. We'll keep on going. We'll have you back on the show. How about that?
Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Okay, Pastor Burns.
Yeah. I was going to go back to some of our discussion earlier. Some people have joined us as we've gone on. Again, you talked about early on about this idea of you as a parent not being able to find the specific books that you were looking for yes. your son. You say it's a little bit younger, but you talked a little bit about the direct feedback. What specifically have you heard people give you about your book?
If you look through the book, mm-hmm. you'll notice that the shades of the different children that are in the book, mm-hmm. they're on a darker hue. Another thing that I've noticed within mm-hmm. books is that even when they do have people of brown complexion, that brown tends to be a bit lighter. Mm-hmm. You look through books for children, mm-hmm. It's very difficult to find books for children that have darker skin complexion. So it was an intentional thing to ensure that, you know, there was a broad gambit of different melanin shades, and that, you know, I gave some special attention to my darker brothers and sisters. So I've had a lot of positive feedback about that choice. Mm-hmm. Also, I've had some feedback about the interesting facts that I've talked about before. I tried to put in things that even an adult, you know, as a parent, if I'm reading to my child, I am reading that book for my child, but I want to be interested as well, right? So exactly. I tried to make sure that, you know, there was some interest there that would have the parent be at least a little interested as well. I've been told that, you know, people say, oh, I didn't even know that information about this particular body part or whatever. So it's been a lot of positive feedback right now. So, you know, it's just about spreading the word, casting that net at this point.
Sure.
Pastor Burns.
Yeah. You know, you made a good point there. I was actually early day reading a book to some kids at school, and I was reading the story, and I was like, hey, I'm kind of curious to see how the story ends.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. But I think that's a good point to know that the parents are readers too. And
yes.
what's a book that you want them to be interested in or gain some knowledge and information from? What's you got the book done, you got it finished. What's been your proudest moment since you've had the book completed?
The official publication on Amazon probably was my proudest moment. Like I said, it took me over 2 years to do everything. Uh-huh. And so just the ability to put my hands up and say, oh my God, I'm done. I finished it, you know. Uh-huh. That was my proudest moment. And so from here, you know, it was just pushing it out there, putting it out there so that it can be received.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think you'd be writing a book about something, or did this all literally just evolve from your own experience with your son?
I didn't really have any inclination to necessarily do it. Mm-hmm. For my son, my youngest son was born here. Mm-hmm. And so even here, there's a lot less books that have us in it, mm-hmm. you know, and that's just the market is a little bit smaller or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can import books from home, and I've done that as well. Mm-hmm. Here you go into stores, and the stores are international. So, like, I might go into a bookstore, but it's a French bookstore. Mm-hmm. I might go into a bookstore, but it's a Japanese bookstore, you know? So it's like, you know, is that French bookstore going to make sure that, are they going to have the type of imagery that I want? Is this Japanese bookstore going to have the type of imagery that I want? There's no point in complaining about it because these guys, they're not me. That's not my people, right? So if I'm going to wonder, or if I'm going to make a decision about, all right, this is what I need, and I don't see it, I got to take care of it myself.
We got to have you back. We just got to have you back. Let me see. Let's go back. Pastor Burns, you got this question?
Yes, from Doug Sims. Says, will this book only be on Amazon, or will other major distributors carry this title?
So when it comes to the being with multiple distributors, there are some complexities when it comes to book promotion. So I haven't quite wrapped my head around what I want to do with that yet. Mm-hmm. And so for Amazon, I'll speak for Amazon specifically. So my book is published and distributed by Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon will give you an ISBN, a number that's like an ISBN. It's not actually an ISBN. Mm-hmm. If you will take it, or you can get your own, and then, you know, you have a little bit more control over it. Mm-hmm. So since I didn't take Amazon's and I have my own, I do have the ability to publish with other distributors. But mm-hmm. the catch is that the commission amount, the percentage is mm-hmm. much smaller if you go with a widely distributed format rather than focused format like only on Amazon.
Wow.
So I have to decide on, you know, what I'm trying to do with distribution and money.
Okay.
Okay, questions are coming up. Pastor Burns.
Let me get on to Mr. Sims and come back to Mr. Lamont. Mr. Sims said he asked because he has an online bookstore and would love to carry it. And we will see if we can get you connected with him, Doug, because we both know. So then we see if we can get some information transferred between you two, okay?
And let's go to Kindle.
For individual, if you have an online a bookstore or whatever, and you want a certain number of copies, you're not trying to get like 1,000 copies. I do have with Amazon. I can purchase copies for myself, so they don't have the commission, the upcharge on it at all. So I get them at cost, and then I can have them mailed to you. So we can work that out. Just send me an email.
But if you do need 1,000, we can probably work something out. Let's go to Kindle.
We'll have to go through some other steps to get that done.
Ms. Burns.
Kendall Lamont says, are there multiple types of pronunciations, like the northern parts of Igbo land to southern, or are the pronunciations mostly the same?
Now, I'm not a Nigerian linguist, so I can't answer that with 100% certainty. So I can say that I don't have an answer for you on that one. I did work with some individuals to ensure that, you know, what I did was legit and that, you know, I didn't do anything that would be offensive, which is also something people should do when you're working with content that is outside of your direct culture.
You gotta sure
what you're doing is okay, and you're not going to disturb or upset the individuals that are originally from that culture. You know, it's everything's been okayed, but beyond the knowledge that I currently have, you know, I can't help you out there.
Okay.
J-Lo should not do that Whitney Houston thing she's talking about doing.
Mr. Mosley, we have 4 minutes left. Is there anything that you would like to get out that we did not address?
You know what? I thoroughly enjoyed my time here with you guys. You've really answered, asked a lot of great questions, and you've covered pretty much all of the content that I want people to know about the book. When I come back on, I'll make sure to have some imagery ready for you so that it can be shared. It's been a great interview.
And we'll have that. You can send that to us and we'll be able to put that on live so people can see that as well. So give us the name of the book again and where they can get it. And if, how about an email address if people would like to, or find out more about Mr. Mosley?
All right. So it may be a surprise to many of you, but I'm probably the only person on this planet that has his name. So if you put my name into Google, you will find me, and there's no way around that. You can catch me on LinkedIn with the name that's there. My email address is MrChinua@gmail.com. The book is called In Sibiri Anatomy. It is available on Amazon. You can get it today. It is print on demand, so you know it'll take a little second for it to be printed and sent to you. But I'm very happy with how the book came out, and I hope that anyone that gets it is inspired and blessed by its production.
Let's go back to the board, back to the higher for last thing. My sister, thank you, Mr. Mosley, for helping to share this information.
You are most certainly welcome. Most certainly, certainly welcome.
So wait, I'm just impressed. It's 11 something and you're where again?
I'm in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi City.
And how long have you been there?
All right, so I've been in the Middle East for 9 years. I originally moved here to Abu Dhabi, and I stayed for 3 years. I had a three-year contract, and then I moved to Qatar, and I lived in Qatar for 4 years. And then now I'm back in Abu Dhabi, and this is my second year back in Abu Dhabi.
We're going to have you back as soon as we can fit you in. Just an amazing interview. People, listen, that's the end of the show. Turning to, I want to thank Mr. Mosley, of course. Pastor Melvin Burns, anything else you want to say?
Hey, Mr. Mosley, thanks for joining us. I know what I'm
thanks for having
me. I got 2 nephews. I can't wait to get online here and order their books.
Oh, I'm happy to hear it. Happy to hear it. Thank you for the support. Thank everyone for the support.
And for some of us old people, you might want to carve it in rock. All right. That's 22 for this week. Listen, go out and sow a seed in life. Remember what season it is. It's Christmas. Listen, go out and bless somebody. Listen, take care. Thank you, Mr. Mosley. Thank you, Pastor Byrne. Yes. Okay. Take care, everybody. God bless. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you.